Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, coming to you live from the OU Israel Center in Jerusalem. Of course, by the time you're listening to this, it will be recorded, but right now, Baruch Hashem, it is being recorded live. Of course, if you think about it, that's a strange way to put it, but no less true, even if it is strange. This show is for Parshat Mas'ei, Shabbat Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av. Today is the 28th of Tammuz, 5765, Thursday, August 4th, 05. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tehiyena Oznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod, ki imacha haslicha lama'an tivarei, ki viti Adonai kivata nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti, nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker, yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav, achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, העומדים בין בים ובין ביבשה, המקום ירחם עליהם, ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה, ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן.
Peace out.
I've mentioned in recent weeks the phenomenon of a cappella music, albums of Jewish music without musical accompaniment, just voice, which actually say on them, approved for listening during the 3 weeks or during Sfirat HaOmer. This particular album is called Songs of the 3 Weeks, Shirei Bein HaMetzarim. It is presented by Avrami Flam. And the song you just listened to was Al Zeh Hayah Daveh Libeinu, Al Eileh Chashchu Einenu. It's an expression of a reaction to a sad occurrence, and the particular one that Yirmiyahu HaNavi had in mind was Churban Beit HaMikdash, which is why it's appropriate for this period of the year. But when a person hears that song and sings that song, there are other tragic events, some waiting to happen, that he could have in mind, because those too make one's eyes grow dim and lay heavy on the heart. More in that direction later, but let's get into this Shabbat. You have an interesting occurrence of Parshat Maaseh being read by itself, which is not that common, falling on Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, or Rosh Chodesh of falling on Shabbat, itself not a common experience. And that brings together the calendar with Parshat HaShavua, which don't always match up. In fact, the fact is that whenever there's a Chag, we suspend Parshat HaShavua, and we read special Torah readings appropriate for the holiday, because the Parshat HaShavua, the weekly portion that one would be up to, is not particularly matching or appropriate to the time. This time, there is one significant point of tangency, convergence, we'll say, in describing the travels of the people of Israel from Egypt over the course of 40 years until they find themselves on the threshold of Eretz Yisrael, just on the other side of the Jordan River. Most of the description is place names. They traveled from Tachat and they camped in Tarach. They traveled from Tarach and they camped in Mitka. They traveled from Mitka and they camped in Chashmona, etc., etc. A few times in the 42 places that are mentioned in the travels, there is, let's call it, anecdotal material. And one of the places where there's significant amount of other material of what happened there is Hor HaHar. Vayis'u mikadesh vayachanu behor HaHar b'ktzei Eretz Edom. What happened there? Now, we know what happened there from Parshat Chukat. But now in Parshat Maaseh, in the recounting of the travelogue, we'll call it, the Torah tells us, Vaya'al Aaron HaKohen el Hor HaHar, Aaron the Kohen ascended the mountain called Hor HaHar, Al Pi Hashem, according to God's command, Vayamat Sham, and he died there, Bishnat HaArba'im, in the 40th year, Letzeit B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, the 40th year following the Exodus, Bachodesh HaChamishi, in the 5th month, Nisan Iyar Sivan Tammuz of Be'echad LaChodesh, on the first of the month. Which means this Shabbat, we actually read about an event that took place on the first day of Av, and we read it on the first day of Av. That connection, that converging points from the two different lines, the line of Parshat HaShavua, or the circle of Parshat HaShavua, the circle of the year. These two circles operate more or less independently of each other, and here is a point where the circles cross each other just for that day. To me, what's extra interesting is the fact that back when Aharon died and the Torah tells us that he died, it does not tell us when it was. But here, it tells us exactly. And Maaseh is always read close to Rosh Chodesh Av. This is one of the years where it's read exactly on Chodesh Av. And that got me thinking in an interesting direction. The cycle of the year and the Parshat HaShavua. In this particular case, where they touch each other, they point in different directions. The calendar says we are coming from the beginning of the mourning for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. We are about to enter in the first 9 days of Av, 9, 10 and a half really. We're about to enter the more serious period of mourning, many restrictions, many mournful practices. We are pointed in the direction of not only commemorating Churban Beit HaMikdash, but we're pointing to the destruction itself. Because, it is said, any generation in whose time the Beit HaMikdash is not rebuilt, it's as if it was destroyed in that generation. So we take a look at why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And we all know about Sinat Chinam and the division among the people, and that unity among the Jewish people is one of the key solutions to the question, how much longer are we going to have to mourn the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? When are we going to be privileged to rejoice in its rebuilding? And then you have the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, and that also is, the calendar is pointing to it, because it happened on a Tisha B'Av when they returned from their journey. And therefore, the direction that we're looking in on the calendar is a long, dark tunnel of exile. But now, on this same Shabbat, let's look at it from the perspective of Parshat HaShavua. Parshat HaShavua recounts for us the Exodus, and by the way, I think it would be appropriate, as we are about to listen to the first Aliyah of Parshat Maaseh this Shabbat, that we have in mind L'shem Mitzvat L'man Tizkoret Yom Tzeitcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Kol Yemei Chayecha. One of the mitzvot in the Torah is to remember the Exodus all the days of your life. We fulfill this when we recite the third passage of Shema. We fulfill it when we say Kiddush on Friday night in Leil Yom Tov. We fulfill it in many other ways. But the reading in Maaseh, I would suggest, is a way to fulfill that command to remember the Exodus, because we have the travelogue of what happened from the moment we left until we arrived at the threshold of Eretz Yisrael. So the direction that the Parsha is pointing us in, even though it is a convoluted route through the, I was going to say road, which is where it came out as rote for root and road, anyway, it is a convoluted route that brought us to the threshold of Israel, but that's at least the direction we're pointing it towards. Not as the calendar is pointing us towards exile, here the Torah is pointing us towards Eretz Yisrael. And not just because the last place of encampment is on the Jordan, Mibet HaYeshimot Ad Ovel HaShitim Ba'arvot Moav, just a hop, skip, and a jump to Eretz Yisrael, but because of how the Torah continues. The Torah continues, God commanded Moshe, saying, speak to the people of Israel and tell them they are crossing the Jordan to go into Eretz Kanaan, Eretz Yisrael. V'horashtem et kol yoshvei haaretz mipneichem, they will succeed in removing all of the local residents, and they will wipe out all of their avodah zarah, their idolatry. V'horashtem et haaretz, and you shall take over the land, v'shavtem bah, and dwell in it. Ki lachem natati et ha'aretz lareshet ota. Because God says, I gave you, the people of Israel, the land to inherit it. V'hit nachaltem et ha'aretz bigoral l'mishpachotehem. You will settle, dirty word in some circles here, you will settle the land according to the divine lottery, and that's a different issue. Again, we're in chapter 33, pasuk 53, v'horashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem bah, you shall dwell in the land of Israel. Ramban Nachmanides says, this is the mitzvah in the Torah to live in the land of Israel. It is a mitzvah that applies in our time. It is a mitzvah that I thank God every day I have been privileged to fulfill and continue to fulfill, and hopefully that will be forever. I know that when my eldest daughter tells me now, as a 28-year-old with husband and three children, and she comes to me with tears in her eyes and says, I know I was less than 5 years old when you brought me here, but I want to thank you for doing that, because I can't imagine living anywhere else. Can you, dear listener, feel the feelings that I must have when your children tell you that? I don't know if my daughter can realize it or appreciate it, how much it meant to me to be thanked for bringing her on Aliyah, because I definitely didn't consult her when she was less than 5 years old. And there are children who grow to resent it. Usually not the younger ones. If you bring a kid in the teen years, you have to be very, very careful to build up a good attitude, because it's easy to resent being uprooted from your chevra. But that, too, is a separate issue. So that is the direction that the Torah is pointing us to in the Torah reading, even though the calendar is pointing us towards the reminder of exile and destruction. And the Torah doesn't stop there either. It gives very clear detail as to the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. God says to Moshe, saying, command the people of Israel and tell them that they are coming into Eretz Canaan. This is the land which shall fall to them as a heritage and inheritance. Eretz Canaan ligvuloteha, the land of Canaan according to its boundaries. And it goes through the southern boundary from Midbar Tzin until Yam HaMelach in the east, and then it goes up to Akrabim and goes to Tzinan, from there to this and that and the other place. You have a portion that draws the map previous the command to live in Eretz Yisrael. Previous to that, the description of the wandering in the Midbar, which brought us to Eretz Yisrael. So I see that the Sedra points us in one direction, the calendar points us in another, but that's okay, because that doesn't contradict. If we have the prophecy and promise recorded in the book of Zechariah, that the fast days, known as Tzom Revi'i, the fast of the fourth month, also known as Shivasar B'Tammuz, and Tzom Chamishi, also known as Tisha B'Av, and Tzom Shvi'i, the fast during the seventh month, also known as Tzom Gedalia, and Tzom Asiri, the tenth of Tevet, these fast days will become happy days, festive days, when the Geula will arrive. And therefore, the calendar and the Parsha are really pointing us in the same direction. Of course, every time you tell someone, the Ramban points to the Pasuk, V'horashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem bah, as the command to live in Eretz Yisrael, a person will say, yeah, but the Rambam, Maimonides, doesn't list it among the 613. All you have to do is open up a Rambam and show the person the quoting from the Gemara The Rambam seems very, very clear that he's talking about a mitzvah as well. Why it is not numbered among 613 is a different issue. But if the Rambam says a person should live in Eretz Yisrael, even in a city the majority of whose inhabitants are idol worshippers, rather than live in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, even in a city the majority of whose occupants, whose citizens are Jewish, then there's something to it. A person who lives in Eretz Yisrael is like a person who has a god, and a person who lives in Chutz La'aretz is like someone who has no god. What does that mean? I'm not going to calm anyone by explaining what it means. Find out on your own. Ask someone else. But the Rambam says it, and he's quoting the Gemara. Personally, my important distinction is between Jews who live in Chutz La'aretz, who will tell you with tears in their eyes and a heavy heart, of course I know that a Jew is supposed to live in Israel. Of course I would love nothing more than to be there myself. But I have elderly parents and I can't leave them. It would be too much of a burden on my sister or whatever. Or I have a serious Parnassa problem because I'm a lawyer trained in American law, and what would I do in Israel? Or I learned this, or look at my age, or whatever, and I have to support my children. These are very significant, and many times good reasons, and good excuses for not living here. I think it's presumptuous to judge somebody like that. I don't have my complaints to those kind of people. My complaint is to fellow Jews who say, Aliyah? What are you, out of your mind? What do I need it for? I have everything for a complete, satisfying Jewish life here in, fill it in yourself, here in Muncie, here in Teaneck, here in Borough Park, here in Golders Green, here, I don't care where the here is. What we have managed to do, we the Jewish people, is not only make do in our places of exile, we have thrived in them. I am basically talking about the attitude of some Jews who not only live in Chutz La'aretz, but are so entrenched in their wonderful community, and there are many beautiful, wonderful Jewish communities, that their attitude, maybe it's a defense mechanism, I don't know exactly where it comes from, but it's, who needs Israel? You want me to give up all of this? And it's really a lot to ask to give up all of that. I can't do more than the Torah does when it says, Vahurashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem bah. It wasn't talking about the United States, and it wasn't talking about England. It was talking about Eretz Yisrael. I'll go you one step further, and this is hard to say because I know many of the listeners to the show don't live in Eretz Yisrael. So let's put it like this. It is meant as constructive idud, encouragement, for those who have not yet committed themselves to Israel, and it is meant as constructive chizuk, strengthening, for those who have. It seems, from the way the Ramban writes about the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, is to make Eretz Yisrael your home and homeland, and no other place. If a person is exiled someplace, he has no choice. But he should always remember that he is a stranger in a strange land, and as much as he would like to be comfortable in his new home, it isn't home. If your home has been damaged by fire, then you get put up at a hotel for a little while, or you live with friends and relatives. And even if the conditions appeal to you, it is still not your home. Maybe that's one way of crystallizing or summarizing the issue here. People, Jews, who have become so comfortable in their homes, first generation, second generation, third generation, maybe more, that Israel for them was a picture on the wall, was lip service paid in the form of Lashana Habab Be'arad Yisrael, or Lashana Habab Yerushalayim HaBenuya. But without that feeling and deep yearning to be here, because it is a more difficult way of life than many Jewish communities elsewhere, and we have problems. Had a woman maybe in her 80s, early 80s, come to me this morning with tears, saying she doesn't know what to do. She came here to come on Aliyah, but she was looking for a peaceful life. And what's going on now with the disengagement plan is tearing her apart, and she's considering not making Aliyah. I begged her not to let anything deter her from doing what's right, to be frustrated, not to stick your head in the sand. It's a very frustrating and more so situation. But I believe with all my heart that this is the place where a Jew should spend his life, living, raising a family, and everything that goes along with it. This might sound harsh, but I mean it. I don't know if I can not say it. It hurts my heart when I see fellow Jews who violate the Shabbat. It hurts my heart when I see Jews in a non-kosher McDonald's. It hurts my heart when I see fellow Jews, fellow religious Jews, who desecrate the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Not everyone who does not live here is desecrating Eretz Yisrael, but many people are. From what they say, from their attitude, from the way they talk to their children, it's a chilul of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And take it as a friendly warning. What can I tell you? It's not every parsha of the week that does this to me, but Mas'ei, how can I pass by the pasuk v'horashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba and not talk about it? So there aren't more than 30, 40 parshiot that I can speak about this. Maybe all of them, but then there aren't more than 54. Just kidding. Let's have a listen to another track from Songs of the 3 Weeks.
Leave me.
Album Avrami Flam presents Songs of the 3 Weeks, Shirei Bein Hamitzarim. The song was Alkein Tzion. The words come from Nachem, the portion that's added to the Yerushalayim Ircha Barachamim Tashuv Bracha of the Amidah at Mincha of Tisha B'Av. Let's get back to Parshat Maaseh. After delineating the borders of Eretz Yisrael, there's reference to the 2.5 tribes that will have territory on the east side of the Jordan. And then God says to Moshe, these are the names of the people who will divide up and settle the land in charge of the operation, Elazar HaKohen and Yehoshua bin Nun. There will be one leader from each tribe who will participate in the process of that divine lottery that will apportion the land, and these are the names of those people. Kalev ben Yefune representing Shevet Yehuda. For Bnei Shimon, Shmuel ben Amihud. For Binyamin, Elidad ben Kislon, who commentaries tell us was Eldad. And each of the tribes have a leader. Total 10 tribes, not 12, because Reuven and Gad are not coming into Eretz Yisrael proper. They have their land apportioned. They do not have a leader representing them in the distribution of the land of Israel. Ela asher tziva Hashem linachel et bnei Yisrael be'eretz Kenaan. These are the men who will be in charge of settling the people in Eretz Yisrael. At that point, the Torah continues by talking about cities that were to be given to the Levim, 48 altogether, including 6 cities of refuge. And those came from the Shvatim, from the tribes that did receive land, and they were the ones who supplied different cities and the surrounding areas to the Levim. Speaking of these cities of refuge, the Torah now goes on to that topic. Now, the basic idea is this. A person responsible for taking another person's life. Doesn't matter whether it was intentional, negligent, totally accidental. Anyone who a life was lost at his hand is to flee to the nearest city of refuge for protective custody. If he doesn't go there by himself, he is escorted there by deputies, shotrim, from the court. Then the person is taken from the city of refuge to stand trial. Witnesses are interviewed, the panel of judges, we're talking not about the major Sanhedrin of 71, but the smaller Sanhedrins of 23, of which there were many around the country in major cities and towns. The panel of 23 judges questions and listens to the witnesses and evaluates the situation. If they determine that this is a case of intentional, willful murder, they can execute the person. Doesn't go back to a city of refuge. If they determine that this was totally accidental or justifiable, then the person is let go free. No restrictions. Not his fault. If, on the other hand, the court determines that this falls into the category called shogeg, which means inadvertent, which means unintentional but with carelessness, then the person can be sentenced, found guilty, convicted of rotseach b'shogeg, an inadvertent killer, and he is sent back to the Ir Miklat to continue living his life until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Could be the next day, he's released. Could be 10 years down the line, 50 years down the line, if the Kohen Gadol has a long life and doesn't die, and the person dies in Ir Miklat, he's buried in Ir Miklat until a Kohen Gadol dies. When that happens, his family has permission to exhume the body and bury it in their own family plot. But otherwise, the person does not leave Ir Miklat. Ir Miklat, a city of refuge, is protective custody, rehabilitation center, a sort of imprisonment, and most significantly, maybe I shouldn't say it like that, but significantly also, an atonement for the person's soul. A person who doesn't intend to kill someone, yet a death occurred by his hand, has some culpability in that act. If you were not careless, the person might not have died. Classic examples of an inadvertent killing, a shogeg killing, would be a person who has an accident with his car and kills someone, but it was determined that the person was driving above the speed limit or without his windshield wipers on a rainy day or without his lights at nighttime or was busy talking on a cell phone or shaving while he was driving or perhaps had been under the influence of alcohol. All of these things are contributory negligence towards the homicide. We do not attribute intent to kill to the person, but we say he should have been more careful. And therefore, we determine that that's a shogeg. This is really a significant judgment call on the part of the judges, 23 if you remember, because you also, in addition to the three categories of mezid, intentional, ones, totally accidental, and somewhere in the middle, shogeg, inadvertent, you also have what's called shogeg karov lemezid. In between Mezid and Shogeg, you have Shogeg Karov Leones, and those don't go to Ir Miklat either. The Mishnah and the Gemara has disputes, for example, of the example from the Torah, the woodcutter. The woodcutter is chopping down a tree, and his axe head separates itself from the handle, flies off and kills someone. Well, there are many possibilities here. Did it happen on the first upswing? Guy took his axe, swung it behind him to come down with a hard chop, and there the head flew off. Then there are opinions that say, not going to call that inadvertent, a guy has to check to see if the head is securely held by the handle before he takes that first swing. Otherwise, we're going to maybe consider it to be more than Shogeg, known as Shogeg Karov LeMezid. When something breaks, had he struck the tree and hit a particularly hard knot in the wood, which caused the axe head to break off, and that bounced and killed someone, then there's an opinion that says, ah, that's Shogeg. Another opinion who says, no, that's Shogeg Karov LeOnes, because that was an unforeseeable kind of freak accident, and so on and so on. This happens all the time in any civil suit where a person is suing someone for a certain amount of money. The judge and the jury determine how responsible we want to consider the person to be. So in the case of Shogeg, that is a serious issue. The Sedra concludes with an issue of concern raised by the leaders of part of the tribe of Menashe after the famous request demand of the five daughters of Tzelophehad is reported in Parshat Pinchas, and the answer that they will receive property allotted to their father and grandfather as people who came out of Mitzrayim. The people of Menashe were concerned that because of the status of a woman's property when she marries out of her shevet and her children inherit from her, the concern was that the total property allotment of Menashe would be eroded if the daughters of Tzelophehad, any of them, were to marry out of the shevet. The response to their concern was they too are speaking correctly, and the girls, the daughters, because of this unique situation, we're talking right up front with the tribal allocations, we're not talking about later where we're talking about a woman who inherited from her father and she marries, this property still stays within the shevet, but in this first incident it might not, and therefore they were required in order to hold on to their allocations, to marry within their shevet, something that later in Jewish history seemed not to have been a problem. In fact, the opposite is such. It was a problem of too much intra-shevet marriage and not going across the boundaries enough. But in this case, they married within their shevet, and the portion of Maaseh in the book of Bamidbar finish on that note. This too was not a mitzvah in perpetuity, but it was a command from God nonetheless that it be done, and the Torah makes a point of saying that it was followed. Eila ha-mitzvot v'ha-mishpatim asher tziva Hashem b'yad Moshe el b'nei Yisrael. These are the statutes that God had commanded the people of Israel through Moshe, where ba'arvot Moav, on the plains of Moab, Al Yarden Yerecho, on the Jordan River. And that sets the stage for the Book of Devarim, which takes place in exactly that same location and wraps up the period of pre-entry to Eretz Yisrael. Rosh Chodesh Av, even though it heralds the beginning of the 9-day period of intense mourning for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, even though it is the Yortzeit, the anniversary of the death of Aharon HaKohen, is nonetheless Rosh Chodesh, which is a festive kind of day, which gets the saying of Hallel, although with two pieces skipped, and whatever else one does to honor Rosh Chodesh, a special meal if it falls on Shabbat, an extra dessert or whatever, should definitely be done for this month as well. If you are listening to this show before Shabbat, then be reminded that there are certain preparations that one should do before the 9 days begin. It would not be appropriate to do these on Shabbat. I refer to making your clothes not freshly laundered. In other words, in addition to not doing laundry of outer garments, shirts, skirts, blouses, dresses, pants, etc., not referring to underwear. Underwear is a hygienic consideration and can be laundered if necessary, during the 9 days. But laundry of regular clothes, we'll say, should be avoided. And also wearing of freshly laundered clothes. And therefore many people on Erev Shabbat this year, before the 9 days begin, will wear some of their clothes, freshly laundered stuff, for a couple of minutes, 15 minutes each, whatever, in order to make them not fresh and be allowed to be used on during the 9 days. As usual, as this show, Torah Tidbits Audio, winds down to its conclusion, there's always lots of other things that I would love to have time to share with you. We will have to suffice it with a wish for a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, a Chodesh that will become completely Tov when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt. And remember, it is not something that we just sit back and wait for God to present to us. We have a Hishtadlus, an effort that can help hasten the coming of Mashiach. Bimheira v'yameinu, amen. Off the show with another track from the album Songs of the 3 Weeks. Remember, it's a cappella, no musical instruments. Shira Bapeh, song by mouth, according to most opinions, is beseder, especially when the songs are as like the ones that we've been playing. Once the 9 days comes, there are opinions both ways as to whether Shira Bapeh is permitted or not. We'll worry about that next week.
Oh.
Lehish Tameah.